From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
So I am right now, before your process is finished, I'm going to release the email about racial profiling. And I understand that the penalty comes with potential ousting from the Senate. And I'm releasing it to expose that, number one, the emails that are being withheld from the public have nothing to do with national security, nothing to jeopardize the sanctity of those ideals that I hold dear.
That was Senator Cory Booker. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Indeed, good to be with you here today. So much drama going on with the Judge Brett Kavanaugh hearings, President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. In a surprise move, Senator Cory Booker rocked the SCOTUS hearings by releasing confidential post 9/11 Kavanaugh emails. But then, you know, we found out so many things that they were okay to release in the first place. We're going to talk about it. And then there's this anonymous op-ed in the New York Times, a so-called senior staffer entitled, "I am part of the resistance inside the Trump administration." You know what, folks? I learned a long time ago not to give credence to an anonymous source. But in an outstanding column, the Wall Street Journal, entitled, "Blame Congress for Politicizing the Court," that is a very clear author, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska. Senator Sasse will be here in just a moment with his insights on the hearings and more on his column. And dozens of sheriffs from across the nation met with President Trump yesterday at the White House. They gathered to thank the president for supporting law enforcement and fighting illegal immigration. We'll talk with Sheriff Chuck Jenkins of the Frederick County Sheriff's Department in Maryland, who was part of that meeting. And in sad, tragic news, on August 24th, Pastor Andrew Steckeline, an Inland Hills church in Chino, California, took his own life after battling depression. His suicide has left a young wife and three young children without a husband and father. Well, how common is pastor's battle with stress and depression? Dr. Jared Pingleton, he's a psychologist and former director of counseling at Focus on the Family and clinical director of the Association of Christian Counselors and also a licensed pastor. He'll be here to talk about that, and call your pastor, call your church leaders. You're going to want to hear that segment there. And all of this great content can be found on TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me at RJonesReports. Well, in a Wall Street Journal column, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska writes, "Brett Kavanaugh has been accused of hating women, hating children, hating clean air, wanting dirty water. He's been declared an existential threat to the nation." Alumni of Yale Law School incensed that faculty members at his alma mater praised his selection, wrote a public letter to the school saying, quote, "People will die if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed." And he goes on to write, "It's predictable now that every Supreme Court confirmation hearing will be a politicized circus. This is because Americans have accepted a bad new theory about how the three branches of government should work, and in particular, about how the judiciary operates." And with us now is the very author of that column, Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, who serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee and eloquent participant in Judge Kavanaugh's hearings of the Supreme Court. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for the invitation. Good afternoon to you as well.
Well, thank you for taking time. I know you are knee-deep in the middle of hearings, and there's so much political theory weaved into really eloquent questions. Tell us what drove you to say what you said and write so eloquently in the Wall Street Journal?
Well, thanks, Tony. I think we've got a crisis of civics in the country. And it just gets worse when you have these hearings that are done as circus show theater, right? There's so much happening right now here that isn't serious. And the American people, I think, are sort of crying out to find a way to have a shared conversation so that our kids and grandkids can understand our system of limited government. You know, the First Amendment is the beating heart of this nation, the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, press, assembly, protest. those five freedoms nested in the First Amendment are so critical, and they only make sense. The whole document only really makes sense if we understand why our founders were so skeptical of power and the consolidation of power and the ease of use of power. And so they wanted to balance power. They wanted to check and balance it. They wanted to separate legislative and executive and judicial functions. And something's just fundamentally wrong when you have a ton of protests happening on a regular basis in front of the Supreme Court. And when somebody is nominated to the Supreme Court, people, as has been happening all day or today, yesterday, the day before, getting hauled out of here, protesters getting arrested, as somebody screamed out about 10 minutes ago, right before I came up out of the hearing room to talk to you, a vote for Brett Kavanaugh means death. He wants to kill us. And that kind of stuff is just crazy. But why does somebody say that? They say that partly because we've let the Supreme Court and the judiciary in general become a political branch, and it's partly because the legislature isn't very good at being a political branch.
You know, matter of fact, you said if there are lots of protests in front of the Supreme Court, that's an indication that the Republic isn't healthy, and people should be protesting in front of this body, meaning your body of lawmakers.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I also just want to apologize, Russ, for calling you Tony. I was, before I knew you were guest hosting.
I will take that honor.
So anyway, yeah, the protests happen here because the people are not at this hearing in general, because this actually is in the legislature today, but the protests happen around the Supreme Court confirmation or nomination because people are used to seeing every June, as the Supreme Court's about to leave for their summer break, they're used to having all these big decisions handed down as if these nine folks wearing their black robes are supposed to be king-like Solomon figures deciding for us the greatest controversies in American life. Well, the American people don't have any power over Supreme Court justices because they have lifelong tenure. And so they shouldn't, in the founders' view and in your and my view, they shouldn't be making really big policy decisions. That should happen in the legislature so that the people later have a veto over it by hiring and firing their legislators. And so there's a symbiotic relationship between a legislature that is doing too little of the political work and instead punting our authorities to the executive branch for faceless, nameless bureaucrats. I don't mean that as a term of derision. There are lots of good Americans who are loving their neighbor by trying to be, you know, a faithful worker of the Department of the Interior or an auditor at the IRS, but they're not accountable to the American people, so they're not supposed to be making policy. And so the people, when they feel that vacuum of political decision-making not done in a way where the people can do the hiring and rehiring or the firing of their elected officials when they next come up for election, they then instead scream out in front of the court. And so that's why we have so much of this show theater going on in terms of protests and hearings like this.
Now, clarify for our listeners this drama this morning with Senator Booker and, hey, I'm going to release these confidential documents, even if it means getting kicked out of the Senate. Well, we're learning there were no rules broken.
And
is that right? Can you clarify for us?
Yeah, it appears that there were no rules broken and that this was just a stunt. So I don't have every fact at this moment, so I'll speak a little gingerly. But let me give you some context, first of all. So there's a law that governs presidential papers. It's called the National Archives and Records Act. And this thing, NARA, is a creation of Congress. It's a statute that says, hey, when President George W. Bush was in office or Barack Obama's in office, and they want to make good decisions, they need advisors who can help them deliberate. And so, because there are too many things, the federal government's too big for one person to know everything for all the decisions a president needs to make. And so a president wants advisors to be able to debate in front of him. And when they do that, they're often done in the form of memos. Now, some of these memos may actually explain to the president something he doesn't know about a terrorist surveillance program we have going on outside Baghdad or going on outside Kabul in Afghanistan. And so there could be CIA sources and methods in a document. There could just be the president asking people to debate really hard in front of him, and so take positions that they might not actually hold and that the president might not hold, but he wants to put the best construction on an argument. And so we have a law that says that presidents' papers as they deliberate are the papers of the American people in the long term. The president can keep them shielded for, I think it's usually 12 years. Some things are much longer, some are a little bit shorter, but in general, W. left office in 2008, and so a lot of his papers are not due to come public till sometime in the future. Well, since Brett Kavanaugh served a couple of different roles for President Bush. At one point, he was a lawyer advising the president. But for a long period of time, about 3 years, Brett Kavanaugh was basically President Bush's secretary. And this job called staff secretary means all the paper going back and forth between President Bush and the cabinet would pass over Brett Kavanaugh's desk. And so Democrats have been trying to pretend that somehow papers or Brett Kavanaugh's papers are being hidden from the public. That's not true. What's true is that all Brett Kavanaugh's papers have been handed over at an unprecedented rate. There have been more papers given to the Senate related to Brett Kavanaugh's nomination than any Supreme Court nominee in history. And frankly, more papers on Brett Kavanaugh than the last five Supreme Court nominees combined. But what hasn't happened, it's not the case that every single piece of paper that was George W. Bush's has been handed over, because they're not relevant. Brett Kavanaugh was the secretary. He wasn't the decision maker. And so President Bush, being just kind of kind and generous, frankly, said, well, when Brett Kavanaugh was my lawyer, when he worked in the White House counsel's office, let me take extra papers that I haven't had time, President Bush and his staff at the Bush Library in Dallas haven't had time to sort through, and they let them be put on deposit in a skiff or a classified room here at the Senate. And they said, hey, senators, you can go read all these things, even though I don't know if any of them might have classified information in them. But if you see one that you'd like to use in the hearing, just let us know. We'll put it first on the list on deciding whether to declassify it. And my understanding is every document, and I'll pull up here, but every document that any senator has asked for, I think they have now all been released. But a lot of times Democrats have decided to pretend that these papers, which regularly were not even Brett Kavanaugh's papers, they're Bush's papers, they've tried to pretend the fact that there's a process to get them released has been some sort of conspiracy to hide something. And so Booker decided he was going to take one of these and release it. Turned out this was a document that had already been released.
You know, I read a couple of op-eds today, one in the New York Times by an anonymous author, and one in the Wall Street Journal by an author known as yourself, Senator Ben Sasse. And I'm telling you, your column was far more beneficial and fruitful for our republic. And it's no surprise that the other editorial came out, given what's at stake here. And that ties into one of the things you said is the solution is not to try to find judges who will be policymakers or to turn the Supreme Court into an election battle. And we've just got about a minute and a half left. Go.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's the answer, right? We need Schoolhouse Rock back. We need a legislature who wants to write the laws and then suffer the consequences in front of the people so the people can again have the authority. If they want to hire us or fire us, if they want to send us back to our Mount Vernon, so be it. That's what humility in government should mean. We don't want our political figures to think of themselves as kings. We want them to think of themselves as humble public servants who, frankly, would rather be from Nebraska or Louisiana or Texas or Montana than being from Washington, D.C. forever. And so the legislature should write laws, deal with the hard controversies in the country, and then let voters decide. The executive branch should administer the laws that have been passed, not try to fill the voids where Congress didn't act by writing laws. And judges should be judges wearing black robes, not trying to be super legislators.
Senator, thank you so much. We're up against the clock here. Thank you for your service, and thank you for what you're doing to help our nation. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Russ. Good to be with you.
All right. Thank you. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska. I've been up there. When I went to the University of Missouri in Marching Mizzou, man, that's a big state, and he's doing some good work. Well, coming up next, some 50 sheriffs met with President Trump and White House officials on illegal immigration. When we come back, we'll talk with one of those sheriffs. When we return, we'll hear all about it. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet values voters like yourself. They share a Christian worldview on issues. through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org, or call 1-877-372-2808.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Russ Jones here sitting in for Tony Perkins. Powered by the Family Research Council. All this great content is on TonyPerkins.com. Make sure to put on your calendar the upcoming Values Voters Summit, September 21st through the 23rd. It's going to be a sold-out crowd. It's huge. It's huge. I think record-breaking numbers have registered for this event of events, the conservative event of the year. Well, yesterday at the White House, President Trump praised dozens of sheriffs for the work they've done keeping America safe, and sheriffs from across the country used the meeting to call on lawmakers to take action on border security and illegal immigrant crime. With us now is Sheriff Chuck Jenkins of the Frederick County Sheriff's Department. Sheriff, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for taking time to join us here on the program. We love our first responders here on Washington Watch and those who keep us safe. And I know that had to be an honor for you to be in the White House yesterday with the president.
It was a great honor, a great opportunity. I was really proud to be there and be a part of it, which it's not my first visit, but every time, I take pride even more every time I'm down there.
What did the president have to say to you?
Well, the president actually, when he came in, let me say we had a roundtable meeting with senior policymakers in the White House, along with Department of Justice lawyers and attorneys and high-level ICE officials. But after that meeting, we went into the room with the president, who came in to basically express his appreciation to sheriffs all across the country, specifically us who were there yesterday, 44, I think, sheriffs from 35 states, and basically to express his appreciation to law enforcement, which we know he has our back. And it was a great opportunity, a great experience, and he really means it when he says he appreciates law enforcement.
And you know, with all of the attacks on law enforcement, both physical and verbal, it's got to feel good as a person in your profession and in your position to know that the leader of the free world truly does have your back. That has to be a different feeling from what we've seen in previous administrations.
It does. And I will tell you this. The day he was sworn in, shortly into his administration, I can tell you as a head of an agency, I felt like the winds had shifted in favor of law enforcement. We're not now worried about a president who's going to intervene in something that happens, whether it's right or wrong or some type of a bad incident. We know that the Department of Justice is there, has our back. We know the president has our back. It's an entirely different environment. And I think because of his leadership, I think that the public views us in a much more favorable light.
Let me ask you this, Sheriff. Did you ever feel, your troops, your officers, your deputies, do they ever feel a sense of not insecurity, but when you hear lawmakers calling out ICE officers, and when you see Antifa and these different groups that truly are challenging the very authorities that keep our community safe, what's that like going to bed at night?
Well, of course, it affects the way we think, the way we do our jobs to some degree. We've got a great environments police in here in Frederick County, completely different than most cities and other jurisdictions. But let me say this. When we see our ICE partners criticized, chastised, maligned for doing their job, and let me tell you, they're a great bunch of professionals. They're committed. They're dedicated. They do an important job, which is to enforce our immigration laws and basically protect the public from that standpoint. And to see them be criticized and demeaned, it's disappointing to say the least.
Now, you were there, you're the group of sheriffs. You were there to call on Congress to act on legislation. Of course, you were meeting with the president, but to increase the border security. Is that what some of the meetings were with some of the administrative staff?
Actually, yeah, the roundtable, and let me just say this, was basically a discussion on key topics that affect sheriffs and immigration enforcement, such as the detainer policy. Let's get that straightened out so that sheriffs are protected against liabilities. Detention center standards so that sheriffs who may want to house federal detainees can do so without a lot of inconvenience and criticism. Looking at border security, what are the strategies going forward? How do we accomplish what we need to at the border? Expansion of the 287G programs to more sheriffs across the country. So they're the types of topics we discussed, and we asked questions, we had conversations, which really and truly, were all good topics to talk about. Now, today, as I understand it, and I couldn't get back down today, but some of those same sheriffs were going to meet with lawmakers, senators, congressmen from their district, and have those same conversations. But I think the most important part of it was how we were able to get directly to senior policymakers to make them understand what problems we're seeing at the boots on the ground level.
Now, let me ask you this. A lot of times we hear about the challenges in the border states. What's a state like Maryland? What kind of immigration issues do you face there?
Well, listen, every county is quickly becoming a border county because the elements that come across the border in terms of illegal drugs, human trafficking, the gang menace, the gang crime, the bad acts that are conducted by the cartels. Listen, they don't stay in the border counties. They infiltrate every county, every city in this country. So in Maryland, we see the same impact of illegal immigration and lack of border security as the border states. We've got the gang crime, we've got MS-13, we have the drug trafficking, we've got every single problem that every border county sees. Although the problem may be worse there, we have to really do what we can do here to keep that from getting to that level.
And especially in this issue, when you're trying to battle that in your community, in your county, and to know the White House is pressing in on that issue, You have to feel good about that kind of support as well, and you probably see that with your deputies.
I do. I feel great about it, about what we're able to accomplish here. And let me tell you what we're doing here just a little bit. We participate with ICE in the Immigration Enforcement Program. Over 10 years, we have removed from this county over 1,600 criminals, including over 100 criminal gang members. So it's been a successful partnership.
Sheriff Chunk Jenkins, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That's Sheriff Chuck Jenkins, the Frederick County Sheriff's Department in Maryland. Well, coming up next, the suicide death of a young pastor has had ripple effects across the world. Andrew Strickland, pastor of the Inland Hills Church in California, left behind his wife, Kayla, and three young sons. What's that mean for pastors, and what are the challenges pastors are facing? Well, coming up next, we'll talk with psychologist Jared Pingleton. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
You've tuned in to Washington Watch. Russ Jones here sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, Andrew Strickline, pastor of the California megachurch in Inland Hills, California, took his own life August 25th, 2018. His suicide followed 4-month involuntary sabbatical to address mental health concerns. And there is no lack of statistics about pastors and depression, burnout, health, low pay, spirituality, relationships, longevity. The list goes on and on. Well, with us now is Dr. Jared Pingleton. He's a psychologist and former director of counseling at Focus on the Family and part of the Association of Christian Counselors and expert in this field. Dr. Pingleton, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Russ. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on board with us here today. You know, this is a tragic event, a tragic situation, and it's affected a lot of folks. And you know, Doctor, we have a lot of pastors and church leaders that listen to this program. Just let's unpack this a little bit. I sometimes wonder if the average parishioner understands the real life of a pastor.
That's a great question, Russ, and I think the answer to that is absolutely not. I'm duly trained and credentialed as a minister as well as a clinical psychologist, and yes, the statistics and the research is sobering and sad. It's true. The average pastor is under an inordinate amount of stress. The research that we did with Lifeway Research published in 2014 indicated that 25% of American evangelical pastors meet criteria for severe mental illness, either diagnosed or undiagnosed. Many more reported suffering with severely stressful relational turmoil and/or dysfunction. The stress and strain in the pastorate is absolutely overwhelming, and we know that there's a bullseye on many pastors' backs, as it were, both spiritually and humanly. from our adversary, as well as from folks in the church. And it's a very lonely, isolated, highly stressful job that is ripe for burnout and all manner of depressive and anxious-related disorders.
And this particular pastor, he had a four-month involuntary sabbatical and was seeking therapy and seeking help and trying to deal with his depression. And I think, you know, what many people may not understand is that for the most part, the parishioners are good and supportive of the pastor. But I read a statistic one time that a pastor leaves a congregation for fewer than six or seven people. That's pretty astounding, isn't it?
It really is. And again, the loneliness and the alienation are enormous. You know, the average church is less than 200 in America. The mega church is really an exception. And the pay is typically very low, commensurate to their education and experience and their peers in other fields. But the hours are demanding, and many pastors don't have good boundaries with regard to working evenings and weekends. So family time, marriages suffer, children are hurting and alienated. But back to this tragic story of this pastor, it was not only that he was experiencing severe stress. My belief is he was still grieving the loss of his father, who was the founding pastor of the church, and having to, I'm sure, feel the pressure of stepping into those shoes at age 30, pastoring an enormous congregation. But he had a whole bunch of other stuff going on as well. The reports show that he had a softball-sized mass surgically removed from his chest recently, that he had passed 60 kidney stones, so he had severe physical problems. Then there was a stalker that was so disruptive to him and his wife and his mother that they all had to move and sell their homes. Because you sort of, it's like living in a fishbowl, life in a glass house, if you will. And so that really, I think, would cause inordinate psychological distress for anyone. And then he'd been traveling a lot and was physically exhausted from going to India and Africa. And so he was unfortunately very much set up to have an enormous breakdown of the stressors that were combining into his life.
Right. His dad had passed, I believe it was in 2015. We all know what it's like to walk in our father's shoes and those that have come before us. And what would you say to people, parishioners, what can they do? Just we're about out of time, got about a minute, but what can people do for their pastors and their families?
Well, I love Pastor Appreciation Month. And, that's something that's going to be coming out next month. And really humanize your pastor, support them, come alongside. I think one of the big problems we have in our culture is the silence, the shame, and the stigma. You could give them a book that we put together just this past year on dealing with mental health in the church. It's called The Struggle is Real, How to Care for Mental and Relational Health Needs in the Church. That's available at AACC.net or on my website, drpingleton.com. That would be very helpful for them.
Doctor, thank you so much. Appreciate your insights, and thank you for coming on. I know this is a big issue. We're out of time, but thank you, and we'll have to have you back on again. Thank you so much.
Look forward to it. Thank you, Russ.
All right, thank you. It's Dr. Jared Pingleton. Well, what say you? How do you treat your pastor? Do give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Let's hear from some care of yourself. What stresses are you under? We'd really like us to dig into this. We need to love on our pastors. Call 866-372-7234.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen. Sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for his kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
Are we moving in the right direction? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our country is headed. With so much at stake in America, do our leaders have a way forward? To find out, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans that want to preserve and protect religious freedom, family values, and the sanctity of human life. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Sam Brownback, Ben Carson, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pompeo, Laura Ingraham, Oliver North, Dana Lash, Sean Hannity, Joel Rosenberg, Todd Starnes, and Mark Levin. Meet Values voters like yourself that share a Christian worldview on issues. Through the main events, networking in the exhibit hall, breakouts, movie premieres, and meet and greets with our speakers. On September 21st to 23rd, be a part of the movement to pray, vote, and stand for the sake of America. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
You've tuned in to Washington Watch. Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. We've been talking about pastors and mental health and depression. And specifically, Pastor Andrew Streckline, California, left behind a young wife, three young children. I want to read for you a blog post from his wife, Kayla. To my Andrew. It's only been 3 days. Nothing can take away the suffocating pain I feel now you are gone. I miss every part of you. I see you everywhere. I replay the events of that fateful day over and over again in my mind, wishing I could have done things differently, wishing I could have held your hand one more time. And prayed over you and told you how much I love you, how much I believe in you, and how God's got this too. You were right all along. I truly didn't understand the depths of your depression and anxiety. I didn't understand how real and how relentless the spiritual attacks were. The pain, the fear, the turmoil you must have been dealing with every single day is unimaginable. The enemy knew what an amazing man you were. The enemy knew God had huge plans for your life. The enemy saw how God was using your gifts, abilities, and unique teaching style to reach thousands of lives for him. The enemy hated it and pursued you incessantly, taunting you and torturing you in ways that you were unable to express to anyone. Andrew, I want to tell you from the depths of my heart and my pain, I am so sorry. I am so sorry you were scared. I am so sorry you felt so alone. I am so sorry you felt misunderstood. I am so sorry you felt betrayed and deeply hurt by the words and actions of others. I am so sorry you were fighting a dark spiritual war virtually alone. I am so sorry you were unable to fully get the help and support you needed. I wish I had one more chance to hold you and cry with you and encourage you. I wish I could see the outpouring of love from people all over the world who have been impacted by your story. I wish you could hold your boys one more time and tell them goodbye. I wish we could go on one more trip together, just the two of us. I am not ready to say goodbye. I am so madly and deeply in love with you. Every part of me longs to be with you. I can't eat. I can't sleep. I can't function. I feel so lost without you. You were my life. I was so proud to be your wife, Andrew. I was so proud to sit in the front row and watch you in your sweet spot on stage. I was always so amazed by you. Every single day you could do anything you set your mind to. You were handy. You made every home we lived in look beautiful inside and out. You were creative. You were funny. You were thoughtful. You were passionate. You had vision. You had charisma, and you were so special. You are irreplaceable, Andrew. There will never be any man like you. I want to tell you that I'm never going to stop fighting for you. I will continue to tell our community and our world what an amazing man you were. Your name will be honored and you will be remembered as a hero. You fought the good fight, and I can only imagine the incredible place God prepared for you when you walked through the gates of heaven. I can only imagine what it must have felt like to see your dad again, healthy and strong. I can only imagine how much joy you must feel now that you are truly free. I wish I could be there with you, celebrating on the streets of gold, but for now I will continue to live for you. I will raise our boys to be men of God, just like you were. Your name will live on in a powerful way. Your story has the power to save lives, change the lives, and transform the way church supports pastors. I love you so much, and I will miss you every single day for the rest of my life. When I think of you, I will smile, knowing that I will see you again one day. Thank you for 10 wonderful years together. Thank you for giving me the gift of 3 beautiful blue-eyed boys who all resemble you. Thank you for choosing me, for believing in me, and for showing me how to live fearlessly. Until we meet again, I will cling to my Father in heaven. He will carry me through every second, every minute, every hour of every day. I read a verse this morning, and I know God's reminding me that even now, in the midst of my deepest pain, that he has got this. From Psalm 16:8. Because you are close to me and always available, my confidence will never be shaken, for I experience your wraparound presence every moment. With all my heart and all my love. Signed, Your Girl. Let's go to Jared in Georgia. Hi, Jared. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment, like, as far as, like, bivocational positions are concerned. I'm currently, and for the last 8 years, I've been working as a bivocational youth pastor. And, you know, a lot of times the expectations, whether they're realistic or not, sometimes I feel like even personally, that there's more expectations on me than there actually is, and the pressure there for me to do more and more and more, it just seems to mount, you know, every day. And it's hard when you're trying to balance, you know, I got 6 children, a wife, a full-time job, and so there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's, at the same time, you've got, like for me, they're youth, but with a pastor would be no different. You got kids that are really struggling with stuff, and so I call it trench warfare. You know, you get in the trenches with them, and you're really fighting with them.
Well, Jared, I appreciate those insights, and thank you for standing up and serving the Lord, and bless you, brother. Let's go to Carol in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Carol.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. You've got me in tears.
No.
I worked as an association secretary, and from there I went to pastor secretary, and from there I moved to Dallas and became an administrative assistant at the convention, the Southern Baptist Convention here in Texas. And I can tell you that it is not the... I had people say, oh, it must be heaven working at a church. And it's not. There is so much pressure. My children, just because I was the pastor's secretary, they felt that they were held to a different standard. And I can only imagine if being a church secretary, the kids feel that way. The family and the children of pastors feel it even more acutely. Mm-hmm. And I know right after I started working at the church, we had a member who committed suicide. And I just could not understand how mm-hmm. someone could leave a wife and children like that. But later you realize the pain that these people are in. And he was in so much pain. He didn't want to come and talk to the pastor about it. Mm-hmm. He was ashamed that he would be seen as weak or less than, you know, a man and like that. But if you are feeling that way, please reach out and get help.
Yes, get some help. Good advice, Carol.
Don't put that family through losing a father and a husband.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Appreciate your support of the Washington Wide listening to the show. Let's go to Austin in Louisiana. Hi, Austin. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I was thinking as I was listening to you before you started reading the letter, was, I mean, the Bible says it's going to be hard to shepherd the sheep, but the main, I'm not, you know, demeaning anybody's stuff they're going through, because I go through stuff all the time, too, with three kids and work and going to church and running around here and running around there. You know, I get, even today I was like, you know, I just feel like just giving up, because it seems like every direction you're getting hit when you're trying to walk with God and, you know, live for Jesus. The world's going to come against you. But I think the peace of God should reign in your heart. And sometimes it's really hard, just to the people out there who are going through that, just hang on, because Christ has overcame the world.
Yeah. Well, as Kayla wrote in her blog post, here, God's got this, right?
That's right.
That some folks just don't see it, or have so much going on, they don't see it. Austin, thank you for calling Washington. Give us a call, 866-372-2234, 866-372-2234. Let's go to George in Tennessee. Hi, George.
How you doing, Russ?
I'm good. How are you, brother?
Man, I tell you, I gotta say, and I'm saying this kind of as you know, just as a rote statement. If it get any better, I wouldn't be able to stand it. But I'm sad about this, because the Lord has revealed this to me before, a long time ago, and He showed me I can't say this to a lot of pastors, because I'm a missionary. God set it up for a lot of, I'm gonna say all pastors, but I'm just saying a lot of pastors. There's 52 weeks in the year. 40 weeks is for preaching. 12 weeks is for you and your family to vacation, because you have to have balance. This is a serious thing to do, especially here in the last days. And his wife in the letter, I'm going to say it like this, and ask the Lord help me say this with a glad heart. She was glorifying the devil from the very beginning. So if you're doing that, you can't really help your husband. You know, y'all have to be in as one. Especially if you accept the thing of being a pastor. There's a lot, but you have to be able to get away from that completely. 40 weeks is enough to preach the word of God. 12 weeks, you have to have some time to have balance. If not, you're going to burn out, and that's not what God's will is. And most pastors, if I said that to them, oh, boy, they threw me out the church. But I know the Lord revealed that to me about 2 or 3 years ago, and He showed me pastors. And they're just burning out, man. They don't get it. They're on a treadmill. You know, and they can't hear the voice of the Holy Spirit when He's telling them to back off. and get some balance in your life. Do this. Oh, no, that's got to be the devil saying that. No. God is a God of balance and fairness in everything, not just some things. And they don't get it. We just got to keep praying for them. And a lot of the people in the congregation do not pray Psalm 91 over their pastor and the family. Because I know a kid that did that, went to jail. He was about 125 pounds, about 5 foot tall. He said, I prayed for that every day for 2 years, and nobody touched me, nobody raped me in jail. You got to pray Psalm 91 over you. And a lot of people, when they leave, that's it. They're done. They don't pray over the pastor's family. He needs complete protection because he's a target on the devil's dartboard all the time.
George, thank you so much. I appreciate those words. And, you know, at the Family Research Council, we have the Watchman on the Wall. FRC comes around. Its pastors try to provide an organization where pastors and their families can serve and to provide tools and resources. We got time for a few more calls. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You know, I recall I served as a pastor for 15 years, and one of my churches was in desperate need of being turned around. It was successfully declining and dying. And I recall when I got there was about 155 folks coming to church. After about 18 months, we were pushing 300. We had young folks, first-time believers. We had baptisms, and I was really feeling God's inspiration and call and love seeing folks that were coming to the Lord and new leaders that I'll never forget. One day after a sermon, one of the older members of the church looked at me and she said, you know, Sonny, you've stolen my church from me. This isn't my church any longer. And I'll tell you this, I'm going to be here a whole lot longer than you are. That was a threat. And, she was right, because after a while, you know, the intensity and the pressure to maintain the status quo was very intense. So it was part of, that road of being faithful to God and at the same time trying to understand the pressures and the needs of the congregation. And a lot of times the pastor is a lightning rod for what's really anger towards God. At least that was my experience. And now the media is my ministry, and I'm able to serve the Lord in this way. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Would love to hear from you. Some important topic. Go love on your pastors. Love on their family. Invite them over for dinner. You know, try to pry into their heart and see what's going on and how you can serve them. So many times we look at the church as, how's the church going to serve me? How's the pastor going to serve me? Well, that works both ways. We all have a ministry. And I remember folks not wanting to go visit people in the hospital because, you know, they said, well, that's what we pay you to do. Well, that can be a ministry as well. And you have your gifts and callings. And I pray that you find a way to rise up and support your pastor and support their families. And I share this scripture with you, the one that Kayla shared with us, because you are close to me and always available. My confidence will never be shaken, for I experience your wraparound presence every moment. Friends, if the waters don't rise and the Lord tarries, I will see you tomorrow. Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You've been listening to Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.